With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. As always, find us on Twitter. I'm at Jay Beardmore. This very podcast is at the Rugby Dungeon. And of course, there is Egg Chasers. Me, Tim and Phil, every week without fail. Find us on Twitter at Rugby Podcast if you want to comment or get involved with the debate or, you know, do all of the nice stuff. Today, I am joined by Charlie Walker. Charlie is an outside back, used to play at 13, played at Harlequins for a long, long time, played a bit of sevens, but now finds himself at Zebre Rugby in Italy. Charlie is a very interesting fella, very opinionated, and I think you will enjoy it. So, here it is. This is my interview with Charlie Walker. Enjoy. Right. Well, I am delighted to be joined by Charlie Walker. Charlie, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, mate. Just got back to the Italian lifestyle, flew back over on Thursday, and it's about 20 degrees, the sun's out, so you can't complain, really.
Nice. Well, I'm in Manchester, it's about 6 degrees, raining and windy, which is pretty standard for here.
Similar.
Now, I guess first things first, we should really dive into serious stuff. I've just phoned you on WhatsApp. Tell me about your profile picture.
What is it?
It's you semi-topless in a leopard print jacket.
Nice impression of that. That was, well, it'd be 2 years ago now. We were lucky enough to be sent on a pre-season kind of, not a pre-season camp, it was a pre-season piss-up really with Harlequins. So we got sent on a three-day trip to Amsterdam, and that was, to put it in a few words, probably an interesting festival we went to on the Saturday, which obviously we all bought into, put some pretty interesting garms on.
I love the idea that you all bought into it, because I usually use, you know, all bought into it when it's something awful, like a bit of fitness, you've all got to buy into it, but it's good that you all bought into a festival.
Yeah, 100%. I think, as you can tell, everyone's looking the part. There's probably a lot less clothes than a lot of other people were wearing. But, yeah, no, it's one of the, actually, I'll put it up there, one of the best trips we went on is at Quinn. I think a lot of teams have gone away from the kind of, you know, we'll go on a pre-season army camp, because if, as long as you get the hard work done back at wherever your training base is, I think if you put 4, 5, 6 weeks in at the start of pre-season, then a little breakaway that isn't negative for anyone, and it's actually a good bonding experience, which it definitely was for the boys.
Oh, I completely agree with you. In fact, you know what? I think as rugby gets more and more competitive, I mean, all the conditioning is broadly the same. I don't buy it at all. Do you know when a team gets a new coach and the first thing they say is, oh, they're not fit enough, or we had to do more fitness? I don't buy that at all. I think as it gets more competitive, the bonding side is going to be much, much more important.
Yeah, definitely. I think, well, that was actually when Paul Gustav had just come in. So, obviously, he had come from Sarri. So he kind of knew the levels of fitness that he wanted from his team. And I think that's, you know, that's credit to the boys. I think he came in and saw the levels where we were at. And, you know, well, in hindsight for players, that's probably why he gave us the, you know, a couple of days off. And obviously he wanted us to get to know each other. There was quite a couple of new faces. And yeah, I mean, I personally would agree that's the best way to get to know your teammates. You know, go around talking to them. There's only so much you can do at training. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, you probably get to know your players best after you've had a beer with them.
Yeah, were Harlequins quite into that team trips out and trips overseas culture? Because that sounds like something, I mean, that obviously is something from Saracens. It was bought over by Gustard.
Yeah, in the past, I think it was definitely more player-driven. I think definitely when I first joined the club, just kind of the different sets of lads, there's probably a lot more single lads when I first joined the club. And, you know, if you've got a few older lads who are, you know, that they've not got families and stuff, they kind of drive the social side of things. And it changed probably as we got older. A lot more guys have families. When you're senior boys who've got families, you know, it's got to come from the young lads who are, you know, they've got to step up and drive it. And obviously that's sometimes quite a hard thing to do for the young lads.
Do you know what? That's a really interesting point. I've never thought of that. I've never thought of the fact that as a team gets older, it might get a little less teamy because, of course, all the older players need to go away and do other things.
Yeah, we always joked about it. Like, obviously, when we were when I first joined at Quinns, there was me, Sinclair, Merrick, Clifford, all in the first year house, and it was very much a lot of the senior guys at Quinns. You know, the guys who won the Premiership, the mainstay in that team. They were majority single at the time, so they, you know, if we were playing Tynedale away or something on a Saturday, then you got the text going out after the Quinns game saying, right, we've got a social at this place. As an 18-year-old, there's no excuses. You know, we're getting the train back to King's Cross and making our way across wherever it was.
Yeah.
It definitely did change it, but I think that's just, you know, that's probably natural in any club. I think it just happened to be Quinns at that time. That was the, you know, the dynamic of the club. And probably there is similar around the club, but different clubs, but I think that we were just an anomaly at the time.
How are you bonding with the Italian lads?
They're generally probably one of the best sets of lads I've played with, as a majority. They're a very close group of boys. It was obviously quite nice for me to come over and already knowing a few of the guys. I've grown up with Jamie Elliott, played quite a bit when I was younger with Dave Ceci.
Yep. Where do you know Dave Ceci from? Is that England age grades, is it? Or
yeah, he was England 18s with us, England 20s. Unfortunately, he was injured quite a bit back in the day. But yeah, no, it was nice coming over here, obviously having a few familiar faces. The Italian boys were really welcoming. And yeah, in the change room, it was a close grip of pre-season. It was, you know, there's no egos around that club. There's just a lot of good blokes and all the boys are there for each other. It's a very tight grip, and especially with having a, you know, there's a bit of a larger group of foreigners this year. So I think there's about 15 of us.
Is it really?
You kind of find, 15 non-Italians. And I think you kind of find when you're in a foreign country, you tend to, you know, obviously there's a bit of a language barrier in some cases, but those guys kind of look after you. And they've actually been really good since, obviously I'm injured at the moment. They've been pretty helpful considering I can't drive or anything.
Of course, because of your knee.
Because
when you were at Quinns, I mean, obviously Quinns is quite heavily rooted in that local area. It's a London club. It's been a London club since its inception. What about Zebre? Yep. Because that's not exactly a club which is, you know, rooted in that area. Is that an amalgamation of a few clubs? And do you have a lot of guys who are Zebre through and through and have come through the academy and whatnot?
No. So it's a completely different system out here. Obviously, you've got the two professional franchises in, well, technically we're not actually professional franchises, we're still actually amateur rugby clubs.
Which really?
Was interesting to see on the contract when it gets put through. So there's us and there's obviously Benetton Treviso. We actually only have one player who's from Parma through and through, which is Marci Violi, the scrum half.
Wow.
So a lot of the other guys are predominantly from the north of Italy. There's not much rugby played in the south of Italy. We have one guy from Sicily who's, you know, he did come up. There is an academy system that was based in Parma. It's now moved, but they got moved at a young age straight after school into this academy. And then most of them play at the local clubs. So in the Serie A, the league below, they all play for those kind of clubs. And interesting, we've actually got six players who the rugby club in Rome is actually a police rugby club. So they actually start their life after school as policemen. So we've got six players in the team, like Carlo Canna and stuff, who are all actual policemen. So they're getting,
I never knew that.
Nah, so they're playing rugby at the moment, but obviously as soon as they finish rugby, they have done all the training, they're qualified policemen, if that's the right term, and they just go straight back into that.
That's quite a good little exit, actually.
Yeah, no, it's a different system, and you know, you could say one way it works, and some ways it doesn't work. But I think that's kind of the surprises that Italy brings. I think that a lot of people will look in and say they're getting it wrong, and you actually can take a lot from it and say they're actually doing stuff right.
That's really interesting. Now, you know, not to talk too much about Carlo Canna, but I mean, was he spending time previously on the streets doing police work and then was doing rugby after work, and now he's a full-time rugby player? Is that how that worked?
Yeah, so they would play, as far as I know, obviously I'm not the expert on it all, and probably some of it gets lost in translation with me, but they would have finished school and then they start playing for the local, the rugby club in Serie A in Rome.
Mm.
And so they're playing, it's only part-time, so they're doing all their training as policemen, getting qualified as policemen, and then playing on Saturdays. So,
wow. Do you know,
I think there's about six or seven boys in the team that do that, and then obviously you have all the other boys that will play from wherever they're from in Italy, but most of the rugby is based in the north of Italy.
Yeah, so where you're based then, I take it there's not much of a club scene, there's not much of anything going on a Saturday. Should you not be playing, you couldn't just go down to a local field and watch some games, no?
There's a lot of stuff fairly close by.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, this afternoon, I think at Calvisano, who you know from the European Cup, they're playing. I think they're playing Colonna. Colonna is obviously just up the road from Parma. Well, not obviously. It's like 20 minutes up the road.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of those games going on. They actually get pretty decent crowds compared to, like, there wouldn't be much difference from going to a Colorno game on a Saturday to going to a Zebra game, in all honesty.
Ah.
It just depends in the town, which town. Parma's not a big rugby town, so you know they are pushing to try and get more people into the ground, but if you've got a big football club, you know, most people are football fans in Parma, so they will go to Parma, which, you know, they're a Serie A football team.
Yeah.
I've heard the big one, who I don't even think they're in the second league, they're in the third league, is Roviga, who I've had a couple of mates who used to play for.
And, yep, I remember them.
They said they pack out their stadium week in, week out, pretty much. But that's just because that's a rugby town.
Do you think there's an element of that as well because they're playing other Italian teams and there's natural rivalries? Whereas, you know, if Southern Kings rock up to your stadium, you know, you guys care, obviously, but maybe it's not got that passion for the locals as such.
Yeah, I think that definitely is a driving force in it. I think it's always going to be hard if you've only got two teams in your league.
Mm.
I think it's just convenience and stuff, really. Obviously, when we play Treviso, we got a better crowd at their place, which Treviso is a bigger town. At our place, it was busier, but we weren't filling out our stadium. And maybe that's something to do with, obviously, more game TV now. We're live on Premier Sports, so if it's easier for them to watch that, then maybe they don't want to come down to Parma, which it could be a bit of a travel for them.
Mm.
Italy's not a small country.
And what's your relationship like with Benetton? I mean, is that a genuine rivalry, like the Quinn Saracens type rivalry?
Between the Italians, it is, definitely. You know, when you join the club, that's all they speak about, which for a foreign player actually got quite annoying for us this year, because not so much. We had a game, I can't remember who we played the week before, but none of the talks were based on the game we're playing that weekend. It was all, right, we've got Benetton in 2 weeks.
Really?
All the meetings get focused around there, which I understand that's a big thing for them. Obviously, the president of our club, that's the big game for him. That's all the staff. That's the game they want to win. And like the boys, some of the boys joke, it's like, well, it doesn't matter how the league goes as long as we beat Benetton. Which, you know, there's no smoke without fire. So it comes from somewhere. It's probably not 100% true, but there is a little bit of an element to that. And yeah, we play them five times this year, which...
Why is that then? So twice in the league? Hang on, how does that work? Because...
Twice in the league... One more at the end for Derby Day, which is the end of the season.
Right.
So twice over Christmas, And then we played them, for some reason, we played them twice at pre-season, which I don't think was the best idea.
No, I don't think that's the best idea.
We've made a living out of that. When I was at Quinn's, we played London Irish twice in pre-season, and then somehow they beat us in the first game of the season.
Which, nice.
I don't think you tee yourself up best for the season if you're playing against your rivals.
No, I tend to agree there, particularly as you can nip over to France and get some games there.
100%. Just play someone completely out of your comfort zone. Someone who's not going to challenge you in different ways. And I think definitely when we were at Quinn's, I think they actually teed up that the first two games a lot better than us. They kept a lot of stuff hidden, whereas we put everything onto the pitch that we were going to do in the first game. And quite rightly, they were like, right, we know what you're going to do. It's just a different way of coaching, I suppose. And,
I guess there's a couple of things going on there, isn't there? I mean, first of all, the Premiership is a different beast. I mean, it is so competitive, you don't really care about anything other than winning in the Premiership. Whereas I guess with your two clubs, it's more of a case of, you want to win. You want to win every encounter.
No, definitely. And I think with the way the Zebra have been, obviously it's not, they've not been where they want to be over the last three or four years. They got a few more wins this year. And apart from last night, they didn't go well at all.
No, I saw that. Was that Glasgow that you played?
Yeah, Glasgow. It's obviously a tough place to go.
Yeah, Glasgow, a good outfit.
We're on a decent run, and I think that was one thing that shocked me when I got here. Not so much shocked, so I was probably quite naive. Obviously, didn't know anything about coming out here, but just the level of players, the skill wise, the fitness, like they have got the players. It's just maybe different ways of going onto the game and how you approach games and just stuff like that. Is backwards out here in terms of travel and stuff and training and just the facilities, but obviously they're working on a budget.
Yeah. When you say that, I mean, how do your facilities compare there compared to Harlequins? Because Harlequins have obviously got a pretty decent setup.
In terms of the whole rugby environment and stuff?
Yeah.
I think Quinn's got to the point where they're very fortunate. It's the way that Premiership's going because it's so attritional. You can afford to change up your training week. It doesn't have to be the same thing week in, week out, which it always used to be. If you said 5 years ago, probably every team in the Premiership would have the same training week. So, right, this day we do this day we do that, X, Y, and Z. I think as the Premiership's going on and, what it takes out of you mentally and physically, you have to change up your weeks, you have to freshen up your weeks. And I think now clubs go on their different paths and, all teams are winning games at the moment. There's no one who's losing every game, so you can afford. Yeah. You can try one thing this week, and if that works, we're not going to do that. I know, for instance, Saris don't do team runs. Which
is that right?
Yeah, they don't do team runs now. So Friday, their whole thing is keep the players fresh for Saturday, and there'll be a lot of clubs who will be like, "Oh, that sounds like a good idea." Or a lot of players who will think, "Yeah, that is a nice idea," but. Probably on the other hand, there's a lot of players who are like, no, I actually like the team run to come in, make sure everything's fresh. And we obviously at Quinn's got a pretty good feed on Friday as well at the Soup, so we're quite happy to come in.
It's quite interesting actually. I was talking to a couple of lads from Sale, and they were saying that if you execute a nice move in the Premiership and it comes off, next couple of weeks everyone will be doing that move because everyone's studying everyone all the time.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree, and probably didn't answer that last question. Finish with the Italians. It's just three or four years behind that, so they're kind of still. Hold on, this is Monday. This is Tuesday. And it's very much we need to do more. Which, I personally don't think it's the way it should go. I think the way rugby is now, how hard it is on Saturday, you have to keep players fresh and you can't just keep running players into the ground. I think the Pro 14 over the Christmas from November to January, we had 13 games in a row.
Is that right?
And obviously out here, we don't have the same size squads as you do in the Prem. So that is a tough ask for players, and you're flogging them into the ground week in, week out. That's when injuries start happening.
So do you know...
I've said to the coach before, we saw a move that Treviso were running, and I was like, let's use that, let's run that against them. Just a bit, something a bit different, because we ran it in training, and you know, one of the teams scored against the other, and I was like, well, that's a good move, let's run that. It felt good, we ran it nicely. He was like, no, they returned the answer. It's like, well, that's not our move, that's their move.
Really?
Obviously, in my head, I'm like, well,
what does it matter?
Yeah, what does it matter? But sometimes it's more of a case of you just bite your tongue, get on with it, because that's their way, and that's the way you do it. You're not going to, like a lot of players say when they go to Italy, France, you're not going to change the way they do it.
No.
If you go out there wanting to try and change it, you're going to get yourself into a bad situation. Probably more to do it yourself, because you'll get annoyed. So it's more a case of bite your tongue and try and work with them rather than against them.
Now, that's quite interesting. More on a global perspective here regarding you. And the reason I say that is you play your rugby, well, you're playing at Quinn's on the wing. Have you moved back into 13? Are you still on the wing now?
I played a lot. Funny, the first time I actually ever played on the wing was for Quinn's.
Yeah.
So used to play a lot, 13 or 15, with especially going up the England age groups, and then Quinn's put me on the wing in an early game and decided to tell me afterwards that I was out of position all the time, which...
cheers, lads.
Yeah, cheers. So I think the way rugby's going, well, as you can see at international level, centres are definitely a lot bigger players now.
Yeah.
You've still got the few who, with outside breaks, like Johnny Josephs and stuff, Elliot Daly still wants to play 13 with the outside break, but ultimately he's been pushed wider. So at the moment, I've been playing more on the wing. Played a bit at the fullback at the start of the season, which, you know, I really enjoy playing fullback. Just kind of, obviously, you can go to different teams now, and different ways they play will suit different attributes of players, and you know, the way they play. But one side for a wing might be completely different to another side playing on the wing, and just kind of finding a place that suits your skill set is pretty key, and it's not just the same play everywhere in the Premiership like it used to be.
Well, the reason I mentioned that move is because when you're commenting on things like, you know, what the back division should be, what team moves should be, if you're playing closer to the action, fullback, 10, 12, something like that, I'm not saying you get listened to more, but you certainly have more of a say about it than playing on the wing, and that might be a little bit frustrating. If at one time you were orchestrating everything, and now you're waiting for the ball.
Yeah, I think the lucky thing at Zebra is that the wingers have a free license, so we kind of go where we want, and it's up to us and the 15 to kind of organise, especially on the short side, because we don't just play the same way. You know, we want to reset and challenge teams, which most teams actually do now, to try and challenge teams on the blind side, because obviously defences can't there. They have to sit off. So it's an easy way of making yards. So it is hard, and it is harder, I'd say. It's not hard. You know, you kind of work your way in. A couple of players you have to get used to who on the inside, they're like, well, I'm a centre, so I'm staying in the centres.
Yeah, whereas, I bet it's annoying.
Obviously, when time goes on, it's like, oh, actually, I've pushed in here. You can go and hold the whip. And if you get the wingers, danger players in the middle of the park, they can get the ball wide, because that's their element of the game, where it should be, you know, footwork, speed, and they're the players that you want on the ball.
You mentioned the size of the players. I mean, obviously, when you were at Harlequins, you were playing alongside lads like Jamie Roberts, and Jamie's obviously an enormous man. You seem to... intimate before that maybe lads of your size don't have as much future as they used to playing in the midfield?
I think it's always been a conceptual misconception about players' size, especially as I joined. I think I've actually been quite lucky that, you know, obviously you read a lot of stuff like 5 or 6 years ago, especially about... I think Shane Williams did a documentary, for instance, who's probably the best example, who whoever coach it was or whichever club was like, right, we need you to get to this weight. And he said he got to that weight, he did everything, but he didn't feel good, he didn't feel he was playing as good at that weight. I've luckily felt that, you know, obviously when I joined Quinn's, they wanted to put weight on, but it was never like, right, you need to get to this weight or you're not going to play. And then I was lucky at 2021 that I got a break. I got a break in the side, got to play, got a good run of games in, and I was scoring, which if you're scoring, you know, your coach can't really say anything about your size if you're scoring week in, week out, and you're doing the basics right. So I was lucky at that, and kind of from there I realised that, you know, I think at the time I was 86, 87 kilograms, which is small in rugby these days, but I had proved to myself more than anything that I was comfortable playing at that weight. And I always had in my head I'd quite like to get to 90, and then obviously playing there I was like, right, you know, I'm okay with this. As long as I'm making my tackles, getting the basics right, then I'm happy staying at that weight. And I think the coaches there agreed with that, so they were quite happy. And I've come over here now, I've probably dropped a couple of kilograms because the Pro 14's not quite as big as the Prem. And it's more for me. Like I know what weight I like playing at. I know what I feel good. And ultimately, if I have a bad game and I'm at a different weight that week, then I'll try and change it for next week.
Yeah. When you say about your frequent scoring, I know all about that because you were in my fantasy team for that year. So yeah, thank you for that.
Oh, that's good news. Thank you very much. Probably one and only. So I'll take that.
Good scorer, mate. Going back to the weight, what always concerns me is, yep. I mean, you look at players like, I'll tell you what, it's just going to see now, Louis Rees-Sammet at Gloucester, who is rapid.
Yep.
And I just wonder, like, if they go ahead and, I mean, I'm not saying they're going to do this at all, but, you know, you could see a scenario where a coach says, get in the gym, put on an extra 10 kg or 5 kg because of his shape, and you'll be better.
Yeah.
I just think maybe you lose that step, lose that pace. You'll lose something from your natural game.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, well, he's not small, is he?
He's like six three. But like you can see, he's got that frame. You can put another 10 kilograms on him because why not? You know.
Yeah. The thing with that is, for me, I've always said if you put he's probably less than 100 kilograms. Like, if a lot of players, I think. Who else? Tom Collins and stuff. If you tell them to put on 5 kilograms, you're not going to make them a big winger automatically.
No.
Because you've got people like, well, the bus who's on the other wing for Northampton, who's 128. So you're not, by putting 5-10 kgs on these smaller guys, you're not going to make them big wingers and ultimately change their game plan. But they're not going to suddenly start, right, I'm big now. I feel like I'm bigger. I'm going to start running into people. Their still main attributes are going to be avoiding people, using their speed. So if that's going to be detrimental to that, I don't understand why coaches would want players to do that. If that makes sense?
Yeah, I completely agree.
You get these freaks in the Premiership now who, you know, they're 120 kilograms and they can run the 110.9. And why wouldn't you put them in the team?
Yeah.
Like, quite frankly, they can do stuff that other people can't.
Yeah, I also think it affects the way that players think, because, well, not the way they think. Just because your body shape has changed doesn't mean the way you think has changed. I'll give you an example. I was watching a centre a few months ago who, you know, being candid, had put on a lot of weight, and prior to that, he was pretty quick. And you can see, just because he's a bigger bloke, he's not as quick, but he's still looking for the gaps that he used to be able to get through. And you think, this just isn't working.
Yep.
Just because you're bigger doesn't mean you're going to get through the gaps. You got through the gaps because you were quick. There's more than one way to break a gain line.
Yeah, no, I think that's spot on. I don't think there is as much pressure nowadays from coaches who are like, right, you've got to put on weight. I think they kind of buy in. They're like, right, this guy's got skills. Yeah, you look at Damian McKenzie, who... what's the Colby for South Africa?
Yeah,
coaches, they're going to put them in the team because they, same as the big guys who can make some nothing, these smaller guys with footwork, you know, they can't get a hand on them, they can't tackle them, and that's always going to be paid. There's no substitute for speed, which is a lot of coaches always said. I think if you try and change it's not going to help the player. And players, you know, going into rugby, I've probably not got the frame. If I wasn't playing rugby, the same for a lot of players, you have to look, how would their frame be naturally?
Yeah.
You get these naturally big guys, I would naturally be skinny. So it's not natural for their bodies to actually put on 10, 15 kg more than their bodies actually should be supporting. And I'm no sports scientist or, you know, physio, but Could that be a contribution to injuries? I don't know.
Yeah, quite possibly. Tell me this then. When your time at Quinns was coming to an end, and it was obvious to you that you're going to move move elsewhere. What was your reaction when your agent came to you and said, Zebra's interested?
So it's actually a weird one. I think last year, I won't go into details, but there was about 16, 17 of us who actually found out one way or another on a Sunday night that we weren't going to be kept on at Quinns.
Oh, no. What was that? I'm guessing that's not official club channels, just something happened or leaked or something.
No, it was an official call. So, you know, a lot of players were, especially guys who had been at the club for a while, were, you know, a bit annoyed by that to find out on Sunday night rather than, you know, face-to-face. But it was in January, and from then, you know, kind of the last 6 months, especially if you know you're not playing, was quite hard for a lot of boys.
Yeah.
And when you've got 17 or so in the squad who know they're not going to be there next year, especially with the way the rugby market is going and was last year. I think last year, maybe the year before, was two seasons when you see all these players that are struggling for contracts. There's a lot of good players in the world right now, and there's always not going to be enough space for players to play where they want to play, ultimately. So I think I got to March, April time. You know, I'd had a couple of little nibbles, but nothing was on the table. And you can get as many nibbles as you want, but until something's on the table, then it actually means as much as the paper is written on.
Yeah.
So I was still scrambling around. I didn't really know what I was going to do. One of my close mates, me and Henry Cheeseman, who's now playing down at Roslyn Park.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. Is he a full-back wing?
Used to be flanker, used to be wing, now's playing in the centre, which is his preferred and best position.
Which, by the way, is a great range of positions to offer a coach if you want to get paid.
Correct, but I think, unfortunately for him, it probably hindered him.
Yeah, it goes both ways.
One year he's playing flanker, next year he's playing wing, and you know, you've got a lot of new stuff to learn. And likewise, when you get labelled a utility back, it's like, well, let's stick him on the bench, which, you know, looks good from the outside, but obviously as a player, you're like, well, I want to start.
That's fair, actually.
So I kind of got to, well, April time, and then I got a call from Conor O'Shea, who obviously used to be the director of rugby at Harlequins, and was last year out in Italy, and he says, what have you got for next year, mate? What are you doing? And I was at the time where I was just being honest. I was like, I've got nothing. I'm open to options. And he pulled out Zebra, which, I was looking for a change. So ideally, I was looking at going to France. But with all the GIF qualified players and stuff, it's quite hard. They do everything very late. And the first time you're in that situation, I think, as a rugby player, is quite hard.
I bet it is.
You're panicking. Yeah. You don't really know what it's going to be like because you haven't been in that position before. And as for any ways of life, the unknown is always scary. So he said, "Do you want to sign for Zebra?" And I was like, "Well, I'm definitely open to chat." So I went over, saw the facilities, kind of saw the area, and I was like, "Yeah, I can see myself living here."
And how did they sell it to you? I mean, what was it that really attracted you to the place? Was it walking around the town? Was it meeting the guys?
For me, it was more just like a breath of fresh air.
I bet it was.
Something completely different from Quinns, which obviously in the last 5 months had been quite tough. So I was like, right, to put it blunt, I'd probably been a bit fed up with the Prem, and in the back of my head, I was probably a bit pissed off the way I'd been treated. So I was like, right, I want a fresh challenge. I kind of in my head was a bit bitter towards the Prem, I think. Probably I didn't want to go to another club and get treated the same.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, a complete new opportunity. Spoke to Jamie, spoke to Dave, and was like, look, how are you finding it? And they said it's different, but they're loving it. And came out here. They didn't want me to come out, actually. I said, no, I want to come out and see the place. They're like, no, we're happy you're not doing it. So, but just different stuff like that. So the coach told Dave he had the day off training to come pick me up, which you'd never get at the Prem Club.
No.
Walked in, met all the boys, really welcoming. Obviously, again, in the Premiership, if you've got a new signing come in, it'll be done behind closed doors, probably a different place to the training ground. But came in, met all the boys. We all went out for lunch. And I was like, you know, this is from what can be quite a daunting thing for some players, I reckon, moving abroad. I was like, well, hold a minute, I've been here for 2 hours and I've been kind of welcoming with open arms. And that kind of continued as soon as I moved over here. I was like, well, this is a great bunch of boys, very close-knit, as I said earlier. And since I've been out here, it's been great.
So this is a bit of a weird question, but did Ziba find you then via Conor O'Shea, or did your agent find that deal for you?
No, so I actually signed it through me and Conor.
Oh, brilliant. So you don't even have to pay agency fees?
Not at the moment, no.
Awesome work. But,
it worked nicely. I think, because I'm now back with my old agent, who wasn't my agent last year, for one reason or another. So I'm back with him, who's a close mate of mine, and he's been telling me that's the way it's going. A lot of clubs, a lot of directors of rugby's will do.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Whatever they can to avoid using agents.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And it is hard. I can imagine it's a hard job being an agent. You've got to be in the right place at the right time. Mm. But at the end of the day, I think you get to a stage when you're in panic mode as a player. Yeah, you're going to do whatever you can to get a job for next year, because ultimately it's your lifeline. I'm like, oh, no, I can't speak to you because my agent will be annoyed, it's like... But I think that was just the place I was in at that time. I was being selfish, but ultimately I was panicking. So
not to underestimate what agents do at all. I think a good agent is worth the weight in gold. But you've got to find a club.
I think it's more players, kind of the academy guys, and the so-called. There's been a lot of journalism on it at the moment. So-called like the middle tier of English rugby players.
I read the article which Charlie Morgan did on himself. It's really good.
And it's more them guys that need the, they need the agent, because they need to know what clubs are looking for, whereabouts everything is. And yeah, there's a lot of senior guys, like they can do their own contracts. Like if you're playing for England, you're a starter, like you've got the experience, the rugby CV to negotiate your own contract. And if you're in a position, you know what you want, you know what the market is, then why wouldn't you do your own contract, I suppose?
Yeah, and I think it's a really strange strange place that Premiership players find themselves in, particularly English ones. So if I remember correctly, you were scoring a lot, but then the next season you were quite injured, or you weren't having the game time that you were. So
when was this?
The last two years at Quinn's. So you had your scoring season, didn't you? And then you got injured. And I just thought, like, go on.
Yeah, no, it was more the change of boss.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I was like me and so obviously the year before I left there was Visser, who were on the we were just challenging each other and kind of getting pretty competitive over who's scoring. And then when Gaspard came in, which when a new coach comes in, you can always it's an exciting opportunity for everyone, and it can go one way or another. It can either go really well for you, which it went for a lot of boys, and good luck to them, like fair play to them, that right place, right time as it is in rugby. For other guys like me and Visser, it went completely the wrong way.
Do you know what? You've sort of just reminded me, which is amazing, this. I mean, I watch a lot of rugby, and obviously Tim Visser was, I in my opinion, one of the best wings. He's certainly one of the best wings at certain aspects of the game in the Premiership.
Yep.
And then overnight, he just disappeared. And then he retired.
Yeah, there was a lot. Yeah, that was probably what made it harder last year. I think there was a lot of guys. Yeah, me and Tim were competing week in, week out. When you're competing week in, week out to scoring in the Prems, right, how many A-League appearances have you got? It takes its toll on you. And ultimately, like, Tim kind of decided that wasn't for him. Obviously, we're at different age brackets, and he made a decision to call it there. I obviously, five or six years younger, I still want to play. I still feel like, well, my body is in good condition apart from this injury at the moment, and it will be in 2 months. I feel 27 at the moment. Next, I'll be in my prime. It's not like I'm on the decline at the moment, and I'll be feeling fresh. I don't think I'm going to lose any of my speed, so I'm in a pretty good place. And there was a lot of players last year. I think, you know, you got Dave Ward, Luke Wallace, Horwell retiring, a lot of players who kind of were at the club last season. But as there's been a lot of media right now, it's, you know, you serve your time for the club, and then it's kind of what's after there.
Where has Luke Wallace gone? Is he at Coventry or somewhere?
Yeah, Luke's at Coventry now. Yeah,
I mean, that's an incredible story, because he had one of the worst injuries I think I've heard of in a long time. Well, one of the most painful, at least. And then he made it back.
Pre-season London Irish game.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounded absolutely horrendous.
Complete freak injury. Horrible. Another one who had to change his kind of... You kind of change your goals, you kind of change your... Well, you change your work, which is hard to take for a rugby player. You see yourself on X and Y as a salary. And then if that gets cut in half, it's quite hard to take. But I think it also, for me, it's made me a lot more conscious about money, if that makes sense.
It does absolutely make sense.
We are paid well, and you take, if you get paychecks cut in half, like completely changed, then you're obviously going to feel a bit neglected as a player, and no one wants to take a pay cut, because ultimately, if you take a pay cut, as a lot of people, I think it was Huff said, he was taking a pay cut from 26. Once you take one pay cut, it's hard to get back. But that's the challenge of rugby, and like I said, it's right place, right time.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things the club should really do is be educating players on spending money. And not even spending... spending money. Because it's not about how much you earn. I mean, actually, most lads under 26 don't need to spend much money at all, because you don't have a family, so on and so forth. If they keep their expenditure low, they've got every chance of ending this career with, you know, a house paid for, or a decent pension pot, or something for a nice transition. But if you're spending every penny that you have, and you're earning 120 grand, and that's absolutely possible, that's only like 70k's worth of disposable income, you're gonna have a real problem.
Yeah, I think that's definitely... certainly at playing at rugby clubs, you play with some interesting characters, and you do see how different people, you know, go about spending their money. Some people are very switched on about it.
Yeah.
Some people aren't. And I actually think you get more switched on. The players that I know who are switched on with their money are guys who have, you know, they've taken a pay cut, or they're in that position where they've actually had to sit down. You know, it's not just, they're not just getting pay rises every year. They've had to sit down and say, right, hold on, this is happening now.
Yeah.
How do I need to change the way I'm living, or can I keep on with this? Am I still looking for, I don't know, if your goal is to buy a house, has that changed? Is it? Well, and it's different stuff like that. Or definitely guys who have been injured a while. You know, one of my best mate is Jack Clifford, who, you know...
Oh, yeah, of course.
Poor bloke's had the worst run of injuries I've seen. But he, although he's tight as hell and will never buy a round, he is very good with his money, to be fair.
Good. Yeah, it's good to hear. Well, I go back to something you said earlier on, which is, you know, as an 18-year-old and you hear that the senior squad are all going out on the beers, you want to go out on the beers.
Yep.
And you don't spend... You know, the senior squad don't look at you and go, oh, yeah, let's only spend to, you know, what 18-year-old Charlie Walker's spending. Charlie Walker says, oh, yeah, I'll spend the same as whatever, you know, Danny Kerr's spending, or whoever it is. And it's, you know, yep. people just look at what the senior guy is doing and think, yeah, that's how I should be living. And actually, it's all individual to each person.
100%. And I think it's a bit different, I'd say, when you're 18, from 18 to 20, because they're kind of, they're your best years of your life, I think.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you can say it differently, but in my opinion, from there, 18 to 20, you know, you've just finished school, you get put in a house with a load of other lads your age, you're playing for a Premiership rugby club, and your whole goals then are you just want to get in the first team.
Exactly.
You know, you come in your first year is your first year, and you're like, well, if I train really well, I'm going to play in the first team, which is actually complete bollocks because it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
You've seen it from another side now. Like, now I'm older, it's like you see these 18-year come in and, you know, you put them on a rower for their first session and they are, you know, they're falling off the thing. But they think if they do that, they're going to play, which is the right attitude to have 100% because we've all been there. But you're laughing and next to them is like, nah, pace yourself. It's
yeah, I mean, if they're not the best years of your life, they're definitely the most exciting.
Yeah, definitely the most exciting. And money's not really, like, you're paid pennies.
Yeah.
But it's a lot more than you're getting paid at school because you're not getting paid. So it's a lot more than zero.
Yeah, and it's a lot more than your mates in uni too.
Exactly. And you're there literally just living the life every day. You've not really got anything to worry about. Like, unless you're Marcus Smith or someone, you're not buying houses at 19. Like,
no.
It's, you're just renting, you're getting by. You know, you're actually learning probably as you're 18, 20 to spend your money a bit wiser. You know, probably for the last couple of weeks, you're living off pot noodles and stuff. But, you know, that's the story that you can tell in 4 years' time. So, remember that house we lived in, that's how horrible was that. And they're kind of your growing moments. You're not worried about getting injury insurance or, you know, paying a mortgage or stuff like that. Or where's your money going to come from if you have to retire? Those things don't even cross your mind then, because as an 18-year-old, well, especially if you're coming up through school and you've played 16s, 18s, you're probably in the 20s now. You think you're indestructible, which, as every young guy thinks you are. You think nothing's going to get you down. You'll keep playing. You'll just keep playing rugby. You keep getting paychecks, which is a nice place to be.
Yeah, it's when you're 22, it's never ending.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to keep going and keep playing until I'm 40.
Just changing the subject a bit then. Did Gustard expect different things from his wingers than John Kingston? Because that's kind of how I read into the situation you found yourself in.
Yeah, I think probably there was more of an emphasis on kind of box kicks and, you know, being more of an aerial threat, which...
Makes sense from where he came from?
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, ultimately where he came from, they had won stuff, so... If you're winning stuff playing that way, why wouldn't you continue playing that way? He obviously wanted to buy into the kind of the Quinns brand, which was always around there. But even, you know, from a playing side of things, I can see that since 2012, we weren't really going anywhere.
Yeah.
So if you change coaches, you change a lot of things, you know, you change a couple of players, then if the last thing you haven't changed is the way you play, then that's probably something you're going to look at when everything's so tight in that league. You need to look at everything and think, well, hold on a minute, why don't we try this? And, yeah, you've got to come in with fresh ideas. And
yeah.
Like, no disrespect. From what he did, he came in and he played the way he wanted to play. And for a lot of players, that didn't really fit into the way because we had been brought to Quinns to, you know, kind of play, not loose rugby, but what we were sold as an exciting brand of rugby. And a lot of, for instance, a lot of things we got bought to the club for probably wouldn't be for being high ball experts. So
yeah, Quinns certainly have a brand of rugby, don't they? And it doesn't necessarily involve a high ball all the time. And not that it does now, for the record, but it's just, I know exactly what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
I also appreciate a man that knows his own mind. And Gustav definitely has a few ideas. What did you make of all, like, I don't know if this is even true, actually. Was there really a bear in the changing room and, like, Apache attack helicopters landing on the training field, that kind of thing?
Well, I'm not sure. Well, I'm not there anymore, so there's definitely a bear. There definitely was a helicopter. and you know, there was a couple of different stuff that got brought into meetings, just to, you know, that kind of stuff, that kind of difference in the training week is fun. You know, you bring something in for a meeting because no player wants to be sat in an hour meeting, just scribbling stuff down. I mean, you know, probably your probably your main players who actually enjoy those meetings will take about 2 or 3 points from an hour. And there's some players who literally will be asleep in the corner.
Yeah. I went to watch...
You've got to change the meeting up and make them exciting. I think we, especially when, you know, we had a couple of characters in the coaching staff, you know, Alex Codling came in, Adam Jones, they, you know, really brightened up the meetings with, you know, I think we played the Wheel of Misfortune and stuff, which...
What's the Wheel of Misfortune?
Run by Codders and stuff, like... Yeah, just different stuff like that.
What happens, not so much
based on rugby.
What happens with the Wheel of Misfortune?
No, I can't go too much into it.
Fine.
Just say there was some good acting, and it changed the meetings a little bit.
Good. I must admit, I have been in a video analysis session before, and I understand why they exist, and I understand what the coaches are trying to get over. But the amount of information that goes into you, I was only in there for half an hour, and it wasn't a Premiership meeting either. I just thought, no one's learning. I mean, there was a lot of Premiership players there, but it wasn't a Premiership team. I can't understand. I can't go out and play rugby remembering what the opposition's going to do on a Saturday and watch this on a Thursday. I just can't. I can't do that. It's really difficult.
Yeah. I think it's even harder as well when. So, I've seen another side now. So in Italy, we have very long meetings, which I understand why they need to be slightly longer, because we have Bradley speaking in English with his Irish tone and throwing a couple of random Italian words in, which make no sense to the Italian. And then we have Troncon speaking full Italian, throwing a couple of English words in.
Oh, yeah. So
there is translation, but ultimately, like, we've had some meetings this year which are about an hour and a half. And I know from looking at some of the younger lads, they have no idea what has just gone on.
That is brutal.
As you get older, if someone shows you a clip, no matter what language they're speaking in, you play rugby long enough, you know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And you know what you need to do. But for younger guys, that isn't the case, you know. And you'll get a lot of younger guys who will learn a lot from sitting in a classroom, and a lot of guys who will learn nothing and actually need to be on the pitch and walking through it or being told what to do, because we obviously get does everyone understand any questions? A lot of young guys, I'm not putting my hand up, no, I'll get shouted at. You get outside, they're going to get shouted at because they don't have a clue what's going on.
Yeah, I can completely understand that. This is a weird question to ask. Does anyone ever bring pen and paper into these meetings? Are you encouraged to have, like, little folders?
No, I was joking about this with someone the other day. So all the foreigners have a pen and paper.
Okay.
The Italians didn't. And then we got told on the first week that everyone needs to have pen and paper and bring and... With in one day, everyone had a pen and paper, and then the next day, no one had a pen and paper. So
I can completely imagine this.
It's got to be enforced. But like lots of guys do it differently. So at Quinn's, you had to have something to write notes down. So some people just do it on their notes on their phone. Some people would make a big drawing on like the iPad or something.
Yeah.
Or other people would just stick with pen and paper.
There's no way that I believe, right, that there is a guy in an hour and a half meeting who's 24, 25, tapping away on his phone, making notes. I don't believe he's using his phone for that reason.
I'd probably slightly disagree with you on that. No one will be scrolling through Instagram or Facebook or something just because the fear of getting caught.
Oh, really?
That was the case last year. Maybe this year in Zebra it's a bit different. But no, generally guys would make, I think if you make the meeting short and concise and there's actually, for want of a better word, there's actually a good summary.
Yes.
Then why wouldn't you take that note down? If you've got three key points for each thing, then write them down.
Yeah.
But if you're going through like, we're doing this, like, you know, they're 12, where's pink laces? Like, I don't care about that. Like, just tell me where he's going to go, who their key threats are, and then we can work on that. Like most players will go and do their own research on if they're playing someone unknown. Like if I'm playing someone, especially in this league, who I don't know much about, I might have a look on his highlights the night before just to see if he steps off his left or if he steps off his right. Because ultimately, it's you on the pitch who's going to look like a dick. So.
Yeah, yeah. So do you guys have access to individual access to analysis and whatnot?
Yeah, there is individual stuff, but obviously more of that stuff is done through, you know, I think there's an app called Huddle, which a lot of people use, and that's more kind of training and
just
to watch your games and stuff, individual stuff. But there's so much media out there now. Like, you only have to go on YouTube, type in a player's name, and you'll find something. And it's pretty simple. Like, players' traits don't change too much. Like,
I think there was a club, and I can't remember which one it was now. Might have even been Harlequins, but I think they put the players in threes. So in a group of three, you watch whoever you want to watch, or you might even be watching yourself, and you make notes on each other. So everyone's paying attention. Everyone has to be accountable to everyone else. I quite like that idea.
Yeah, that is a good idea. I agree, but it's one of those things. It's very easy for me to go up to one of the players and be like, "You did this really well."
Yeah.
But the harder thing is to go up to someone and be like, "What the hell did you do that for? Why'd you do that?" And I think that's where you get the real. If you're a tight knit group and you want the best culture out of your team, that's the level you've got to get to. I think you can't take stuff personally, especially in rugby.
No, you can't.
Yeah, you get enough criticism and stuff. If one of your close mates or your teammates says something to you that's, you know, not so good, then you can't take that negatively. You've got to be like, "Oh, cheers for that, mate. That's going to help me in the future." But if you're taking everything negatively, there's so much negative that gets aimed at players now. You're not going to be a happy bloke.
This has just occurred to me. You've got no Italian links, have you?
No.
So you're.
I can tell the next question.
Well, I mean, you've been there 2 years. Do you need to have five now, though?
I've only been there 1 year, actually.
Oh, of course you have. Sorry. Second season is what I'm thinking of. Oh, right. So there's no chance of you pulling on the blue jersey then.
Well, ironically, it was actually Connor who sent me off to play England Sevens, so that kind of put a spanner in his Italian works if that was ever his plan. There's no chance of that.
Do the Sevens count, do they? Are they a capture team?
From what I've been told, but there's so many loopholes and stuff like that, isn't there, that people can find. And
yeah.
Well, I've been trying to find the right person to ask, but... I presume that counts as a full international cap, so it wouldn't.
I'm not really sure what it counts as. I mean, I think the whole cap rule is absolute nonsense. You've either played for England or you haven't. I mean, playing in England in the 20s or England A is not playing for England, and neither is playing sevens. In fact, it's even less. It's a different sport.
Yeah, no, exactly. But you try and find the right person to ask that question to, and you'll get 100 different answers back.
Yeah, I mean, the best example of that, I mean, the Irish know exactly what they're doing, because they managed to work out that Mike Haley, even though he played for England age groups and England A, he didn't play for them when they were the designated capture team, which is, I mean, that's like investigative journalism style research.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite incredible. And they worked out that, yeah, okay, he's played for these two teams, but not at the right time, therefore he's still qualified for England, which is great work.
Get him in. Same as Addison, wasn't it?
Yes, I'm not sure he played for England A, but yeah, exactly same sort of thing. England through and through the systems, and now he's playing for Ireland. And good for him.
Yeah, and good decision for both of them as well.
Yeah. So just reading between the lines there, if it was an option for you to go and play for Italy, you'd probably go and do it then.
Yeah, but I think the thing's changed now. So I think last year, if I came, I know a couple of the boys, the other foreign boys. It's 2 years for them to get residency.
Yeah.
I think it's now actually changed to 4 or 5.
I think it's 5, you know. So, I mean, what are you, what are you now? You're 27, 26?
27, yeah.
27. So by the time you get it, what, you're 31?
Yeah, probably a bit old.
You can still do a job.
Yeah, well, you'd like to think so. But no, I don't think that's on the equation. And it was never something that... It wasn't in the back of my mind when I moved over here.
Yeah.
It was more... move over, actually get on the pitch and, you know, enjoy playing rugby, which I think is kind of the key for a lot of players who are going through it now. You don't want to be, you just want to be on the pitch, enjoy your rugby, and, you know, you can be getting paid X, Y, and Z wherever you go. For instance, in France, I've got a few mates, you know, they're paid in, you know, buckets of cash, but if they're not enjoying the experience, then it's not really a great place to be.
That's actually a very good point. I think one of the more interesting developments in Italian rugby at the moment is the identification of, well, I guess English talent. I mean, I know they are Italians, but Callum Brealey's off to you guys soon. It'd be nice if you could land, what's his name? The huge Gloucester back row who keeps on running over everyone. Can't remember his name now. Pledri, of course. Yeah. And I bet there's going to be a few more.
I think there will. They need to invest a bit more in just little stuff that will keep players happy.
Yeah.
You know, stupid stuff at Zebra, like, yeah, it's quite common in Italy, but there's no food, which is a little thing.
Sorry, run that past me again? There's no food or after games?
Nah, just during the training week. So we'll train for four or five hours, but we won't have food at the club.
I am staggered at that.
Yeah, but apparently Treviso are the same. We don't have a groundsman, which obviously for back three players makes quite a big difference. And just the whole, like, refreshing up the schedule, which, you know, boys are working on, which has come from international players coming in who have different experiences, who have come from top sides. You know, we've got a couple of boys from Leinster, and they're like, well, and why are we doing this? And if you don't ask the question, you don't get, is kind of how we're working. So we're trying to, you know, at the start of the year, it was like, well, we're coming on Wednesday. And we're like, well, why are we coming on Wednesday? What are we doing? Like, and if you don't have an answer to the why, then players are going to ask you.
Yeah, of course they are.
And it was very much, well, we're coming in on Wednesday because it's a Wednesday and we've got to do the Wednesday session. And then it'll be, well, hold on, why don't we not do the Wednesday session? And then it'll be like, well, hold on, then when will we do the Wednesday session? And it's kind of breaking down that. So
yeah.
That's not actually how they're thinking. It's like, yep. Well, hold on, actually, we need to do that.
Yeah, lads, we don't need a Wednesday session. Calm down.
Yeah, like, we'll do stupid stuff. Like, I think October, we trained Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, travelled for 12 hours Thursday and played on Friday. And, like, we're like, why are we doing this? Why don't we have Wednesday off? And they were like, well, you've got the whole day of rest on Thursday. We're like, well, sitting on a plane, sitting on a bus is not rest.
Yeah.
Were you sitting down? I was like, well, no, that's not technically how it works. And just different stuff like that, that obviously it all comes from funding. Like, if they get more funding, the facilities will get better. You know, they could get food and stuff like that. But I think Treviso are in a good spot at the moment. Speaking to a lot of the boys, their facilities. I know England train up there. They have the facilities, and I think that it's getting Zebra to where that is. And, you know, we've got the players. We're not far behind.
No.
We've given them some close run. Pre-season, we beat them. We drew to them. But ultimately, that attracts players to come to you, I think.
Yeah.
We might lose a couple of players to Treviso, and that isn't because they don't like the boys or anything. That's because they're going because it is actually a better lifestyle. They get looked after better. The facilities are better. That's where Zebra wants to be. I know we've had talks before that eventually I think the future plan is to get three franchises in Italy, which, you know, from the outside sounds good. You know, maybe get one down in Rome.
But yeah.
At the moment, if your two franchises are struggling, that's never going to happen because you're never going to get funding for it.
No, I think the funding thing's weird because obviously you've both got both Treviso and Benetton. Sorry. Let's start again. Both Zebra and Benetton have got club presidents. But I think there's a little bit of a muddle, particularly in the Pro 14, as to who pays for everything. In the Premiership, it's obvious who pays for everything. The club owners pay for everything.
Yeah.
And I think that does hamstring them a bit because everyone's waiting for everyone else to pay for stuff.
Yeah, it's very much driven by the federation. So to put it in the most basic terms, which obviously has a few loopholes in it and stuff, and it's not 100% correct, but it's basically like the head of the RFU.
Yeah.
Picking, like, he'll pick the Quinn's team, he'll pick the Wasps team, he'll pick the Tigers team. And then the head coach is just there to coach them.
Madness.
So if the Federation want, you know, X to play, X is going to play that weekend. And, yeah, in a way, you kind of sit there, like, I've been told before that, well, we need to play these guys this weekend. And if you get told that as a player, like, I've been told from the top he has to play, it's like, well, at least you're being honest with me, like,
yeah,
which a lot of players will appreciate, especially guys who maybe haven't had such honest treatment in the past. I'm like, okay, fair enough. At least you're honest. Like, you've given me a rest week. He's like, well, hopefully we'll play you again next week. And you go from there, which is better than, you know, oh, you're not going to play this weekend because, I don't know, you slipped over in the 52nd minute or something. It's like, well, does that really affect my game, like, or something like that?
Yes. How have you found the travelling in the Pro 14? Have you done the slog to South Africa yet?
No, I think I've timed this injury to perfection, actually. there's some interesting stories that I've heard about that.
I think I'd quite appreciate hear some of those stories, but probably not on the podcast.
No, I think that's probably safe to say. Let's just say they're not free, I don't think. They're not free trips.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's probably all I can dive into that. But no, I think we're going to the... No, the Kings are coming. We're playing the King. The Kings are coming to us, and then we're going to the Cheetahs. The travelling is tough.
Yeah.
I think it's from what I've heard, it's a lot better. We've had it a lot better this year than it was last year. But the thing, the difficulty with Palmer is there's not Palmer Airport doesn't run anymore. It has like two flights that go to Italy. But it doesn't go anywhere else.
Oh. So
we have obviously we're on a budget, so we. We don't find the closest airport, we find the cheapest airport. So.
Oh, God. So you've got to go all... I mean, Italy's not actually famed for its roads. It's all rail.
Yeah. So if we... So I think we had a bad one. We went to Brive earlier in the season, and it would have taken us 7 hours on the bus. But we drove to Treviso, and then we took a flight to Bordeaux. So Treviso... From us to Treviso is like 3-4 hours, maybe. Flight to Bordeaux, 2 hours. And then it was another 2.5 hours on to Brive.
Goodness me.
It's just stuff like that. But like I said, you're not going to change that. So if you find stuff to do, you plan for it. You know you're not getting out of it. Then you actually make the most of it.
So, sorry, I'm going to have to probe a little further here. You say it's not free trips. I hope you're not implying that some of the players have got to pay for things over in South Africa.
No, I probably can't go into that.
Okay, fine. Leave it there.
I can tell you, in the past, boys have had to pay some money, which is interesting.
Isn't it just?
But, yeah, like, just little things. Like I think the boys today, they coming back from Glasgow, they left the hotel at 4 a.m. And, you know, after a game, that's going to be tough. And luckily, we've got Saturday, Sunday off.
Yeah.
But if that was a Saturday night game, we would still be in on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is the Pro 14 in general. I mean, if you're going to play in Ireland, yeah, of course, Dublin's a major world city. But, you know, yeah. The other places aren't. Well, no, they're not, actually. Let's just say that they're not. And the chances
well, like,
of
even
you...
when we...
Go on.
Yeah, we played... When we played Belfast, we flew to Dublin and then drove up, so...
Yeah, it makes sense. God, yeah. The travelling sounds brutal.
There is a lot of travelling, and... Well, I knew that when I came over here. It's not like... It's not something that I come over here and get annoyed about. It's something that you're like, right, hold on a minute, I've got this. Just kind of being a bit more proactive on stuff, so I actually have stuff to do on the trip rather than just sit there and be like, well, this is actually annoying me, because if you sit down and you start getting annoyed with yourself in the first hour, you're probably going to get annoyed for the rest of the trip. And
yeah, you could probably write a book.
That's probably not going to be... Yeah, you're probably not going to be the best bonding for the rest of the lads, is it?
Okay, so, first of all, thank you so much for your time. We've been nattering on now for well over an hour.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
The last thing for me then is, well, actually, a couple more things before we go. How do you see your future panning out then? Do you think you see yourself long-term over in Italy?
To put it bluntly, probably not.
Okay.
I think for me at the moment, like, it's a great experience, you know, picking up a new language, new culture, new challenge. It's what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
I don't see it as a long-term thing, I don't think, because just the way it goes, I don't think it's the best for my career. And there's a lot of players in the world who are quite happy just turning up to work, you know, picking up a paycheck and leaving. And whereas, you know, I still feel young. I am young.
Yeah.
I still feel fresh, and I want to challenge myself. And I think for me, I don't think Italy's the best place for that. Especially, like, I'm on my own. I'm single out here, so it's a great lifestyle.
Yeah.
But it's completely different to someone who's come out here, you know, with their family. So if you come out here with your family, then it's a great life for them.
Yeah.
Something completely different. But for me, there's not a lot we do outside of rugby. And obviously, as an English person who speaks English and very little Italian, like, studying's not an option out here. It's
no.
Very much, we play rugby. And then, as you said earlier, Palmer's quite a small place. Not a lot goes on. We go for coffee with the other foreigners. And then it's kind what? Of, well, should we go for another coffee? and it goes from there. So I wouldn't say it's a long-term plan, but I, like in rugby, you'd never rule anything out. And we'll see what happens. I'm on a 1+1, so we'll see what happens next season.
So what about something like the MLR? I mean, that must be a little bit enticing.
I've been in contact with a couple of people out there. Definitely exciting, and it's definitely something that I wouldn't say no to. I know a lot of boys are looking to go out there at the moment, and ultimately, why wouldn't you? I think if someone comes to you when if you look back and say, right, someone offered you 6 months to play in San Diego, for example, which is obviously the best place to play there.
Yeah. They're all pretty cool, to be fair.
Yeah, they're all something different, but you would regret to, probably only because I've been to San Diego and I loved it, just chill on the beach all afternoon would be pretty nice. But if someone said, when you're retired, you're 40-odd, and someone's like, oh, I could have gone to America for 6 months and played rugby. Like, it's stuff like that where you probably would regret it. And I know a lot of players who have kind of finished rugby or, just played for one club, or which is a great achievement, and I've got the utmost respect for them. And, I might have been the same if things went different at Quinn's.
Yeah.
But ultimately, there's also a lot of boys who are like, well, hold on, why didn't I try that? Why didn't I take a leap and try something different? Because it only improves you as a player as well.
Even from an amateur point of view, because I was never good enough to even play a good standard of amateur. But even from that point of view, I wish I'd have spent, when I was 19, spent a year in New Zealand just to see what the rugby was like there, see what the coaching was like there, just do something different.
Yeah, and I think that's why I'm so glad I'm here for a year. I might be here for 2 years, but it's something when I look back, it's like, well, if I never really experienced anything different, then how do you know? Like, you don't know if you're going to enjoy something until you try it.
Yeah, well, from my point of view, Charlie, I very much want you to come back to the Premiership. Earn me some more fantasy rugby points. That'd be much appreciated. And then you can go out to the MLR.
Okay, perfect. Well, if you're a director of rugby, then I'll be taking you up on that offer.
Fantastic. Where can we find you on social media, and are you particularly active?
I'm on Twitter, but it's more kind of retweets of football stuff, really. Instagram, I think it's CGN Walker.
Excellent. Mate, thank you so much for joining me today. Really appreciate your time. And hopefully we'll have you back on one of our other podcasts too.
Sounds good to me, mate. Cheers for having me.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot.
Have a good weekend, bud. Have a good weekend, bud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.